Well, good morning. As Kevin said, I spend my life really working with businessmen, and I do teach, and I do speak, and I write, and I find myself from time to time in a lot of counseling situations. And in fact, we have two people on our staff that's all they do is counsel, and the guy that really heads it up, a guy named Jay Lloyd, I asked him recently, when men come here with their problems and their struggles, what percent are self-induced? In other words, how many of them have problems by making bad decisions in the way they conduct their lives? And he thought about it for a second. He said, probably 95%. And clearly, from that information, it's pretty clear that our decisions and our choices have consequences. And this is why I contend one of the greatest assets in all of life that you can possess, that you can pursue, is wisdom. And King Solomon says it's more valuable than jewels, and nothing you desire compares with it. And you get a good grasp of its value when you understand its definition. It comes from a Hebrew word, chokma, which means to have a skill or expertise in living. And think about how your life would be so different if you were truly an expert in living this life. Think about the advantages you would have. Now, I say that recognizing in this room there probably is a great deal of wisdom. But we can always possess more. It's something that you can basically spend your entire life seeking to acquire. And it has several different components to it. And I want to talk about those real briefly and then focus in on a final component of it. First of all, I would say this. Wisdom is to have the ability to distinguish between those ideas in life that are true and those that are false. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Stephen Covey's best-selling book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's a terrific book, and he talks about this very thing. He says that if people are going to truly lead healthy, vibrant lives, he says their ideas must be rooted in the truth. And he gives a great illustration to point this out. He talks about, in the book, going to the city of Chicago. Imagine that you are going to the city of Chicago for the first time. You've never been there before. You fly in at night, you go to your hotel room, you spend the night. First thing in the morning, you come down and go to the front desk and ask for a map. Do you happen to have a map of the city? I've got a lot of things I want to see today. And they tell you, you're in luck. We got some brand new maps. Just came from the printer yesterday. And he hands you one of these maps. And without realizing it, the printer made a mistake. What you really have is a map of the city of Detroit. And it says Chicago across the top. And you go out into the streets and you start trying to match up the map and where you are, and you realize you're terribly lost. And you get frustrated. And so you decide, you know, I need to put more effort into this. I need to walk faster. Of course, where does that get you? It gets you more lost.
Further lost,
yeah. And you get angry. And you begin to think, you know, my attitude's just not very good. I need to improve my attitude. I'm going to have a positive attitude. But having a positive attitude doesn't help at all. You're still lost. In fact, what Covey says, it really doesn't matter what strategy you employ, that you will be lost in this life if you have the wrong map. And I think he's absolutely correct. And I find this to be true in the lives of so many people. They're attempting to live this life with maps that are entirely inaccurate. And it's so easy to develop false ideas. Think about, I had this conversation with my kids the other day. It's so easy to have a false ideas and beliefs about success. I mean, what does it really mean to be successful in life? Is it all about accomplishment? And what is real wealth? Is it just about money? I've spoken at funerals where people have no money. Those that died had no money. And yet they were incredibly wealthy in the things that really count, particularly their relationships. And in the work that I do with men, a big issue is, what is true masculinity? What does it truly mean to be a man? And so you have all these different issues. It can be your work, your identity, the source of happiness in life. And our ideas about these things can be completely in error. And if that's the case, we're living this life with the wrong maps. Now, there's a second aspect to wisdom that I think is important to understand as well. So many people in our culture think that your life, the way your life will turn out, is based on living a moral life. And there's truth in that. I mean, you can obviously ruin your life by making bad moral decisions. But you know, when it gets right down to it, most of the big decisions that you'll make in life are not moral. They're judgment issues. And they require wisdom. Think about it. I don't know how you got into the career that you're in, but you made a career choice at some point. That's a judgment issue. Think about choosing a spouse. You know, how do you have a good marriage? How do you be a good husband or a good wife? Then you got financial decisions, investment decisions, raising your children. How do you raise a child well in this culture? The way you spend your time, establishing your priorities. All of these are judgment issues. And they require wisdom. You see, wisdom understands how life truly works. That's why wise people are very forward-thinking. They understand that all of life is connected, that there's a cause and effect relationship between the choices that you make today and what you end up with tomorrow. But ultimately, and this is kind of where I want to go today, ultimately, wisdom understands there's a pattern or fabric in all reality, and that life is governed by certain laws and principles that God has woven into our earthly existence. And the great thing about principles is that they're not good or bad. They're not moral or immoral. They're simply true. And the great thing about principles is they make life predictable. They create the potential for certain outcomes in our lives. And this is what's so important. When we align our lives with these laws and principles, that's when our lives will flourish. And so I want to talk to you this morning about three principles that I think if you truly will apply them to your life, it'll have a huge impact. Now, how many of you know the name Jack Welch? You know the name Jack Welch? He said something 25 years ago that had a real impact on my life. And what's interesting about Welch, he became the CEO of General Electric back in, I think it was 1982. And at the time, it was a faltering home appliance company. I mean, and it was going into the ditch. It was dying. And he came in and took over and transformed it into one of the great companies in the world. Now, when he retired in 2001, the stock was at $60. It hadn't done too well lately. I think it closed yesterday around $7. $6.60. But the fact is that when he came on board, he made this statement. He basically, this was kind of an important focus that he had. And it had a real impact on me when I first heard it. He said this, and this was kind of a guiding principle that drove everything. He said, the key trait of a vital, dynamic corporation is looking reality straight in the eye and then acting on it with as much speed as possible. Now, you know, you can substitute the word person. This could apply. The key trait to a vital, dynamic individual is that you look reality straight in the eye and then act on it with much speed as possible. When he became CEO, Welch said he inherited a lot of great things at GE, but facing the truth, particularly as it relates to problems, was not one of the company's strengths. He said they had too much superficial congeniality and unrealistic optimism. He says this made candor extremely difficult to come by. So what is the first principle? It's really kind of simple. If you want to be a healthy person, if you want to have a healthy organization, you have to immediately run straight towards your problems and not away from them. I don't know if you're familiar with the name Jordan Peterson. You might have seen him interviewed. He's been on a lot of different news shows because he wrote a book that probably will be the best-selling book of nonfiction in 2018. And it's called The 12 Rules for Life. And Peterson says, if you want real chaos in your life, he says, don't deal with your problems. Let them linger. Pretend like they're not there. Ignore them. He says, because we somehow have this propensity as people to somehow believe, if I leave my problem over here, maybe it'll go away. You know, the problem is, they never go away. They really don't. And often they end up growing worse. They are magnified. They compound. And Peterson, who is a brilliant psychologist, he teaches at the University of Toronto, loves to emphasize and teach on this very principle about dealing with your problems. And one of the things he does, he uses a children's story to make the point. And I want to read it to you. It's called There's No Such Thing as a Dragon by Jack Kent. It's a very simple tale, at least on the surface. It's about a small boy, Billy Bixby, who spies a dragon sitting on his bed one morning. It's about the size of a house cat and very friendly. He tells his mother about it. But she tells him that there's no such thing as a dragon. So it starts to grow. It eats all of Billy's pancakes. Soon it fills the whole house. His mom tries to vacuum, but she has to go in and out of the home because the dragon's everywhere. And then the dragon runs off with the house. Billy's dad comes home and there's just an empty space where he used to live. The mailman tells him where the house went. So he chases after it. He climbs up the dragon's head and neck and rejoins his wife and son. Now, Billy's mom still insists the dragon does not exist. But Billy, who's pretty much had it by now, insists, there is a dragon, Mom. It does exist. Instantly, it then starts to shrink. Soon it's cat-sized again. And everyone agrees that dragons of that size exist and are much preferable to their gigantic counterparts. Mom, eyes reluctantly open now, asks somewhat plaintively, why did it have to get so big? Billy quietly suggests, maybe it just wanted to be noticed. And at this point, Peterson says, we love to sweep our problems under the rug, which is where dragons feast on crumbs, and it begins to grow. And he says, at some point in the future, It will burst forth in a way that you can no longer ignore. And usually the end result, he says, is chaos and misery. Now, this can happen in your company, or it can happen in your personal life. In fact, Peterson says where this happens most frequently is in people's marriages. He says that when marital conflict and problems arise, he says so many couples, they don't react, they don't attend to it, they don't discuss it with their spouse, they don't work for peace, they don't take responsibility. And having been married for almost 24 years, I can honestly say the possibility of a growing dragon lurks beneath every single marriage. And this is why, truly, if you want a healthy company, if you want a healthy marriage, if you want to be a healthy person, run straight towards your problems immediately and don't let them linger. Now, I have a great application I want to share with you before I move to the next principle. I was talking about this very issue, this very principle, with a gentleman. In fact, I had breakfast, I had lunch with him 2 days ago. He is the CEO of his company. He owns the company. He has over 1,000 employees. He's got a lot on his plate, but he said, you know, this is something I've learned. He says, when I get to the office, the very first thing that I do, I look at everything that needs to be done that day, and I identify the one thing that's going to be the most unpleasant thing to do, the most difficult thing to do, and he says, I tackle it the moment I get to the office. And he says, it's amazing what it will do to your day. How not only free it up, but you will enjoy your day so much more. He says, because historically, this unpleasant task, this unpleasant problem, I would usually say, I'll do it at the end of the day. Or I'll do it in the afternoon. And he says, what happens then, you get to the afternoon, you think, well, you know, I'll just handle it in the morning. But he says, if you do it first thing and get it done, it's amazing how much more effective you'll be and how much better your day will go. I think that's a great point, and I think that's pertinent to this principle. Now, a second principle has to do with humility. I've written a book last year called The Power of a Humble Life, and so it comes out of there, but it's a very significant principle. And just to kind of lay it out, let me share with you an interview that I read that was, the interview was with Laszlo Bock. He is the head of human resources at Google. He's in charge of all the hiring and maybe even a lot of the firing. And this, what I'm here to tell you is it's in the wisdom book that you have a copy of. But he says that one of the primary traits that they look for and the employees that they hire, right up at the top, the number one thing they really look for, he says, is intellectual humility. I don't know if you know that term, intellectual humility. But a person with intellectual humility realizes there's so much that I don't know, and they readily admit it. And therefore, they're always seeking to learn and to grow. They're always seeking continuous improvement. On the other hand, Dr. J.P. Cotter, who teaches at Harvard Business School, he says, you see just the opposite in arrogant people and arrogant leaders. He says, basically, they over-evaluate themselves. They listen poorly. They learn slowly. And part of the reason is they arrogantly think, I know so much. I don't need improvement. Cotter says they feel like they're sufficient and think there's very little that they need to learn because I've got it all. Now, there's an interesting gentleman by the name of Charlie Munger. Do you know that name? Do you know who he is? He's 94 years old. He is the vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway. Warren Buffett calls him, he's my partner, he's my best friend. And Munger, back in 2007, gave the commencement address at the University of Southern California, USC, which is what most people call it. And he spoke in this commencement address on intellectual humility. Listen to what he says. These are his words. It is crucial to be hooked on lifetime learning. And then he references Berkshire Hathaway, which he says is the best regarded company in the world with probably the best investment record in the history of civilization. And of course, the anchor of Berkshire Hathaway is Warren Buffett. Now, Buffett's about 88. But in this address, this is what he said about Warren Buffett. He says, Buffett spends half of his waking hours reading and a big chunk of the rest of his time talking to knowledgeable people all over the world. And then I love this. He says, Warren Buffett is a continuous learning machine. And if you ever hear him interviewed, you see the intellectual humility come out. I mean, he's a very humble guy. And yet you would think at 88 years old that he'd easily sit back and think, you know, I kind of got this figured out. But as Munger says, he is a continuous learning machine. And he says, he believes this requirement applies to all walks of life. In the address, Munger says, I constantly see people rise in life who are not the smartest, sometimes not even the most diligent, but they are learning machines. They go to bed every night a little bit wiser than they were that morning. And boy, does that habit help, particularly when you have a long run ahead of you. I've been reading an interesting book on the greatest coaches in NFL history and the genius behind them and their success. And one of the greatest that I found kind of interesting is a guy by the name of Bill Walsh, if you remember him. He coached the San Francisco 49ers back in the 1980s. And in the 1980s, in that 10-year period, he won 3 Super Bowls. And then he retired. And I find his strategy to be really interesting. He says, my job as the head coach is to coach the coaches. He said, I really didn't coach the players. I coached the coaches who then coached the players. And he was a brilliant football coach. But that was his style. But he said, because of that, I never hire coaches unless they have this intellectual humility. He says, I can't use a coach that thinks he knows everything. I need a coach that's coachable. I need a coach that has intellectual humility. I don't know if you know the name Wynton Marsalis. He's a jazz musician, and I'm not into jazz music, so I don't know him, but he obviously must be good. He's won 9 Grammys. And he speaks of the mindset that you have to have if you're going to advance in any field. And I don't know what your field is, but I think you would want to advance in it. And he says, humility engenders learning because it beats back the arrogance that puts blinders on. It leaves you open for truths to reveal themselves. You don't stand in your own way. Do you know how you can tell if someone is truly humble? I believe there's one simple test. Because they consistently observe and listen. The humble improve. They don't assume that I know the way and I know everything. You see, people with intellectual humility are students for life. They seek to learn from everyone and everything. And so wherever you are in your life journey, there's always opportunities to learn. And this is what intellectual humility will bring into your life. And I truly believe it will enable you to grow and to flourish. I love what author Matthew Kelly said. He said, wherever you find excellence in life, you find continuous learning, because they go hand in hand. He says, wherever you find that continuous learning is missing, you find mediocrity. And so I guess the principle in its simplest form is there's strength and there's power in intellectual humility. Now, the final principle that I want to share with you, I'm going to introduce it by talking about an important area of life that affects us all. And I'll start by reading to you a riddle and see if you can figure this out. I'm your constant companion. I'm your greatest helper or heaviest burden. I will push you onward, or I will drag you down to failure. I am completely at your command. Half the things you might just as well be turned over to me, and I'll be able to do them quickly and correctly. I'm easily managed. You must merely be firm with me. Show me exactly how you want something done, and after a few lessons, I will do it automatically. I'm the servant of all great people, and alas, of all failures as well. Those who are great, I have made great. Those who are failures, I've made failures. I'm not a machine, though I work with all the precision of a machine plus the intelligence of a person. You may run me for profit or run me for ruin. It makes no difference to me. Take me, train me, be firm with me, and I will place the world at your feet. Be easy with me, and I may destroy you. Who am I? No. Those are good answers, but no. Anybody else? Your habits. Your habits. You know, I don't think we realize how our habits shape our lives and the path that we go down. Think of these words that I read from that. Take me, train me, be firm with me, and I will place the world at your feet. Be easy with me, and I may destroy you. You know, those are sobering words. They really are. Matthew Kelly says, habits have power over us. They play a central role in your life story. For most people, their habits keep them from becoming the best versions of themselves. He goes on to say, my whole life I've been studying champions and excellence. And I've been fascinated with the best of the best at anything. The one observation I have continually made over the years is that the best of the best, the enduring sports figures, the business leaders, the saints, they all have better habits than everyone else. Now, before I give you the principle, I want to share two quotes that really kind of a good way to kind of pave the way for the principle, which is, you will see, will impact your habits. The first quote comes from Bill Bradley. I don't know if you, he's again an older guy. I'm familiar with all these people because I'm so old. But Bradley was an All-American at Princeton in basketball. He was a Rhodes Scholar, so he went straight from Princeton over to Oxford, where he studied for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years before he got that degree. Then he comes back and plays in the NBA for the New York Knicks for like 10 years. And from there, he runs for the Senate and is a senator for many years representing the state of New Jersey. You know, not a bad career. But he made this comment. He said, you know, success is a daily task. And he says, so I've taken this approach to life and have to ask myself, what am I doing daily to make myself better? And then John Maxwell says this. It's very simple, but it's very profound. Listen to this. I'm going to read it to you twice. You'll never change your life until you change something you do daily. You'll never change your life until you change something you do daily. And this leads me into the third principle. And this third principle has a name. It's called the vector principle. And I'll share this. I addressed a management group, I want to say 7 years ago, of one of the largest, most prominent companies in Birmingham. And the founder of the company, the CEO at the time, said to me afterwards, "That vector principle may be the most important principle in life." And I share that with you so that you might really see the significance of this and how it can impact your life. Because when it gets right down to it, our lives change when our habits change. Now, the third principle, the vector principle, impacts our habits. I'm going to read to you what it is. Vector is a term in mathematics and physics that quantifies the speed and the direction of an object. If you were the pilot of a jetliner, you would use vectors to define the course to your destination. When you're given a new vector by the control center, you turn the plane to line up with that heading on the compass, creating a new vector angle. Obviously, even the smallest vector change in the cockpit can make a big difference in the plane's ultimate destination. Though it may seem a small, imperceptible change, with every mile traveled, you are further from your previous course. For example, you could make a tiny vector change while flying between New York and Seattle and end up in Los Angeles. The vector principle applies to our lives in the same manner. Even if you never fly an airplane, you are vectoring through life by the choices that you make. You are currently on a path that was determined by choices you have made since you are aware of your capacity to choose. Many of these choices seemed rather insignificant at the time, but, and this is the heart of the principle, small changes make a big difference over time. Making small changes in your life make a big difference over time. Nito Quaben, who's a very prominent business consultant, said one of the greatest reasons people cannot mobilize themselves is they're always dreaming of some grand accomplishment that they hope one day will come to pass. Most worthwhile achievements are the results of many little things done in a single strategic direction. Back in my insurance days, I read a book by a guy by the name of Donald Phillips, who studied the life of Abraham Lincoln. He was fascinated with Lincoln and Lincoln's leadership skills and the way he led the country as president. And it seems that Abraham Lincoln understood this vector principle because he applied it when it came to winning the Civil War. Lincoln realized, this is according to Phillips, Lincoln realized that the attainment of such a successful outcome had to be accomplished in small steps. So he constantly set specific short-term goals that his generals and cabinet members could focus on with intent and immediacy. Pat Williams, who is the general manager of the Orlando Magic, he was good friends with John Wooden. And Wooden is considered probably the greatest sports coach in all of history. He was a basketball coach, coached at UCLA and won like 13 national championships. And they were having dinner one night, and Pat asked him, "Coach, if you could pinpoint just one secret of success in life, what would it be?" He thought about it for a minute and he said, "The closest I can come to one secret of success is this: a lot of little things done well." You know, I believe that all great accomplishments and all significant goals reached is a result of a lot of small objectives met, a lot of little things that are done well. You see, in times past, particularly back in my 30s, early 40s, I would, at the beginning of each year, I would write out my goals for the year. And they usually were very ambitious. And almost every year, when I'd get to March, I'd fail miserably. Until I learned this principle. And so now, at the beginning of every year, I seek to make 2, 3, or 4 small changes. Not huge changes, small changes. And I do it in the most important areas of my life. Excuse me. And over time, they become habits. And you, what you see is, as time goes by, you see a ripple effect. A compounding takes place when it becomes a habit that's part of your life for 5, 10, or 15 years. You know, the idea of compounding, Albert Einstein says that's the most powerful force in life. Now, most of us understanding the power of compounding when it comes to finance, investing. But I don't think we realize how powerful it can be when it's applied to our lives. So as I wrap this up, I would ask you to think about this and really challenge you. Based on what you've heard today, is there anything I've said that you can put into practice? 2 days from now, I turn 65. And as I look back over my life, I think one of the greatest truths that I've learned is that if you want to grow and develop, if you want to seek continuous improvement, you have to be intentional about it. You have to plan for growth, or it'll never happen. And this is true in every area of your life. But ultimately, to put any of this into practice, that's a decision that you have to make. And if you think about it, the decisions and choices you make are the foundation of your life. That's why Peterson says they lead to order or they lead to chaos. They lead to excellence or they lead to mediocrity. You see, life is not made by the dreams you dream, but by the choices you make. And as John Wooden said, there's a choice you have to make in everything you do. So keep in mind that in the end, the choices you make will ultimately make you. And my prayer is that as you go through life, you will truly choose wisely. Y'all been a terrific audience. It's been great being with you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.